Thank you for tuning in to our latest episode of Twin Souls, a Best Friends podcast. We hope you enjoy our Murder, Mystery, and Mayhem series, and we plan to bring our listeners even more content in the future. We tell you all about ourselves, our lives, and our stories, and somewhere in between, we get into tough and sometimes funny or sexy topics. Stay tuned for more episodes from us at Twin Souls Podcast.
So a first case we are going to kind of chat about and get everyone warmed up on is a case by the man of Robert William Fisher. So on April 10th, 2001, a 39-year-old Navy veteran shot his wife in the head, slashed her throat, and then slashed the throats of his 10-year-old son and 13-year-old daughter. He fled the home, but before he fled, he lit the home and burned it to the ground. The fire caused a massive natural gas line explosion. Once the fire was extinguished, then the bodies of the murdered woman and his two children were found. Police named Robert William Fisher as a prime suspect, as police believed his wife was planning to leave him, and he didn't want the subject of the children to be subject to the stress of a divorce. Robert Fisher disappeared. He was an avid hunter and outdoorsman, and it's believed he may have committed suicide, or he started a new life with a new identity. Currently, he is still missing, and there is a $100,000 reward for any tips leading to his arrest.
Robert Fisher is a tricky one for me because he has all the training to stay off the grid.
Oh, he totally does. He's an avid hunter and outdoorsman. So to me, when I think of outdoorsman, he knows how to build things like in the outdoors.
Survive off the land.
Yeah. Survival guide. So to say that he disappeared in natural park in Arizona or even fled to, let's say, up north towards Denver, perfect. Yep. No one will ever find him in the mountains.
Well, especially because he was such a, I mean, if you look at him, if you look at him, this is going to sound kind of sick, but I always thought he was a pretty good looking guy. I thought so. Have you seen him?
No, I'm trying to find my phone so I can quickly search, but I have no idea.
I thought he was a pretty handsome looking guy. And I think that if he just changed his identity a little bit, he probably could have gotten away with it because he looks like the typical man, typical army vet.
Oh, okay. Yeah, the first quick picture I see, I definitely get that.
Like, he's actually good looking. Well, kind of.
Yeah, he has this thing. Okay.
So this happened, and he was in the medical field as well.
Yeah, I can definitely see this guy completely disappearing, going off the grid. I mean, it's... very possible that he did disappear and then kill himself, but the fact that he burned the house down, killed his family, and then fled, that to me means that he doesn't want to be found. Like, he could have just fucking shot himself in the head at the same time, and he didn't.
That's true.
So to me, just like Chris Watts tried starting a brand new life. Was on the way. That's what his plan was, starting a brand new life. He didn't disappear and run away like this guy did, but I feel like given the chance or given knowledge that the police were on his back, could have happened. But he's not that smart.
Well, it's like Scott Peterson.
Yeah.
Exactly. He killed Lacey, and then he was found with what, like $10,000 cash?
Yeah, dyed hair, was
planted. Yeah, he had bleached his hair and his beard.
Yeah.
And he had like a bunch of like fine lacy pins in the back of his car.
Oh, really? That's kind of...
And a bunch of survival gear. They were saying he was probably going to go to Mexico and go off the grid, but obviously he was caught, so that didn't work out very well.
Exactly.
But Robert Fisher is still missing.
He is, yes. But the next one... was caught. So this guy's name is John List. So the year was 1971. It was an early November day when John List killed his two teenage sons, his teenage daughter, his wife, and his mother in their Westfield, New Jersey mansion. He used a semi-automatic and a revolver. He shot and killed his whole family. John List left and started a new life with a different identity. John had planned the killings in advance to give himself more time to escape. He had canceled all services to the home, told employers and schools that the family was going on an extended vacation. It almost took about a month before the bodies of his family were actually discovered. So he had at least like 30 days almost
to get away.
Exactly. Or to at least begin his getaway.
Which is actually a lot more time than most. I mean, look at Chris Watts. He was caught in what, 48 hours?
Yeah. It was pretty quickly there.
So
left behind was a letter in which List claimed he killed his family because of the financial issues and a sense that his children were becoming immoral and less religious. To me, that's a bullshit. Like, you're going to kill your family. Yeah. You're going to become immoral and less religious for killing your family, but go on with your religious reasons.
Yeah, funny how that happens.
For almost 20 years, List evaded the police and lived a new life. So technically, this guy did get away with it. However, in 1989, America's Most Wanted aired a segment about List, including age progression photos, which led to one of List's acquaintances recognizing him, calling in the tip, which led to their arrest. In April 1990, he was convicted of 5 counts of first-degree murder and was given 5 consecutive life sentences. Almost 20 years later, on March 21st, 2008, he died at the age of 82. This guy was able to kill his family, go start a brand new family. I'm going to assume he started a brand new family. Like, you're not going to.
Or at least got married. He at least got remarried.
At least got remarried for sure, minimum.
Because it doesn't say, I was looking on Wikipedia so I could see a picture of this guy. Yep. It doesn't say that he has any more kids. So he probably got remarried.
Yeah. So quick look at John List. He looks more like a typical outcast, I guess you can say.
Yeah, he does. He looks a little bit like BTK to me.
Yes. I was just looking at that photo for sure. Yeah.
He looks a lot like the BTK killer to me. Dennis Rader.
He definitely, like, if he approached me on the street, I don't think I would think twice about him as well. I think he'd be a very upstanding citizen. I mean, based on that picture. First look, but like some of the other photos, I would say, yeah, I can kind of get where he seems a little bit off. Like the one where it's him and his family in like black and gray, and he has much shorter hair and he's much older. He does look a little more sketch there.
Oh, God, I don't like these pictures at all that I'm looking at.
Right.
He just doesn't look like a family guy.
No, definitely not.
So he was caught. He was 5 consecutive life sentences. Holy cow. So he didn't even serve. He served 20 years. That's nothing.
Right?
That's nothing. Right. So and how many years?
And how old he was. Like he got, oh, here you go. You can, here's some food. Yeah. Here's some books that you can read. Enjoy
shelter.
Your time. Yeah, here's shelter.
Till you die. Huh. Well, it's going to be the same with Chris Watts.
Yeah. This next one, however, ended a little bit more prematurely. So this is Stephen Supel. On March 23rd, 2008, Easter Sunday, Stephen Supel murdered his wife and their 4 adopted children, ranging from 3 to 10 years old, by beating them with a baseball bat. The following morning, Supel called the police and asked law enforcement to come to his Iowa City home. Supel then left his home and crashed his car on purpose into a concrete barrier, killing himself. Investigators discovered he had been indicted a month earlier on charges that he'd embezzled more than $500,000 from his former employer, an Iowa bank, where he worked as controller and vice president. While Supel had pleaded not guilty to the charges of embezzlement and money laundering, he told investigators he'd stolen hundreds of thousands of dollars from the bank over the course of several years. The Supels were devoted Catholics, and all 6 members were given a joint Catholic funeral, including Supel, which caused a great deal of controversy in the religious community because he'd murdered himself, his children, and his wife.
And it says even 1,000 people attended his funeral alone.
Yeah, like, it's crazy. Like, I don't understand what these people were thinking. Like,
this is crazy. And it says it happened right after they attended an Easter mass.
Yes.
What is going on? It said too that he wrote a letter.
Yeah, detailing. All these people love writing their letters. I don't know what it is.
Wow, that's crazy. So one thing that most of these, I'm going back to the question at the top here for a minute.
Yes.
So most things that are similar in these types of cases, I notice, is financial.
Yeah, it seems like the financial is kind of the main thing. And then it comes down
like a shame to get a divorce type thing. Mm-hmm. Like they don't want to pay the wife and the kids and all that, which financial that goes in with it.
Exactly.
Some of them, I'm trying to think what else was, or cheating. They were having an affair, but did they ever say why? Oh, Fisher, right. Because he thought his wife was going to leave him.
Yes. Yes.
John List did it because of financial reasons. That's what he says.
Yep.
And then Steven Supel did it because he stole money and decided to murder his entire family for his mistake.
Yeah, exactly.
Basically.
It sums it all up.
I'm caught up.
Our fourth case is Christopher Foster. On August 26th, 2008, 49-year-old businessman Christopher Foster murdered his wife and teenage daughter, shooting them and the family's many dogs and horses to death. He poured 200 gallons of oil all over his mansion in Shropshire, England. After setting the home on fire, he climbed into the bed next to his dead wife and eventually died from smoke inhalation. Security cameras posted around the property captured the tragedy, allowing law enforcement to learn exactly how Foster killed his wife, daughter, and himself. An investigation about the familicide also revealed why Foster, who lived in an opulent home worth more than $1 million, committed murder, suicide, and arson. While Foster had made millions by developing materials for the oil industry, he spent his fortune recklessly, purchasing material items like expensive sport cars, simply to keep up appearances. So it's already starting to sound money. Again, money is the issue.
There's always a financial underlying aspect, whether they stole it or they owe it.
Right?
That's what it seems like. Or they don't want to pay it.
Yeah. But like the whole thing is like, why? Like, I don't think they'd be coming after your wife for the money. They'd be coming after you for the money. If you don't get the money, you're going to jail. As simple as that.
I mean, did you see pictures of that house?
Of this one, Christopher Foster? No.
Wow. Big, 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 big house. And it looks like it's all burned. Everything. Ooh. Nothing left.
So basically, when his business began to fail, creditors threatened to repossess his assets, including his costly family home. Officials believe that instead of admitting his financial problems to the wife and daughter and accepting the mess he was in, he thought the only option was to destroy his family and the lavish home that he was on the verge of losing anyways.
Yeah. So he was going to lose everything and his pride got in the way. So he decided to kill them all. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, that's what it seems like. Like these people are just pawns. They're not humans.
No, it doesn't sound like it. It's like
my opinion.
Oh, like I really don't get their thinking. I kill my wife and daughter and everything will be great for me now.
When you're going to lose everything anyway.
Like I kind of get it when they kill themselves along with it. Okay. They're all trying to do the same thing. You're all gonna die, but not like when William Fisher like escapes and then disappears, and it's like what the fuck is happening?
I almost wonder with William Fisher, because he was so good at getting away. I almost wonder if he had someone else from the inside of the army helping him.
Sometimes they are considered brothers. I mean,
well, that's what I mean.
Yeah, when they go into the army, they come out and they've gone through something that not a lot of people get through. So they become so close. So it is totally possible.
Like maybe he knew somebody with a private plane.
Yes, exactly.
Who was able to fly him wherever he wanted to go, and he just paid him off to not tell anybody. It could be anything. I can't see him going on foot after all that and not... He probably hopped a private plane.
Okay.
He probably knew someone in the army that was an infrequent flyer.
Yeah, definitely.
Just a theory.
This next one is slightly more... had a little more media attention, I guess you can say. So this is Chris Benoit. So if those of you don't know who Chris Benoit is, he was a 40-year-old professional wrestler who in 2007 strangled his 43-year-old wife Nancy to death and suffocated his 7-year-old son Daniel before hanging himself from a weight machine in the family's basement.
Oh, I remember this.
Fayetteville, Georgia home.
Yeah.
The family's bodies were discovered by law enforcement on June 25th, 2007, when no one was able to get in touch with Chris or Nancy for a number of days. Investigators found Bibles next to the bodies of the victims, and a search of Chris Benoit's computer led them to believe he may have tried to resuscitate his son after killing him. A lot of people have speculated about why the professional wrestler murdered his wife and child before ending his life. Following his death, scans of Benoit's brain revealed severe damage caused by a number of concussions suffered from his long wrestling career, leading his father to attribute the familicide to these...
His father, he was officially diagnosed with CTE, which is short for chronic traumatic encephalopathy. And it was found in all regions of his brain. So it wasn't just like in the front and, you know, in the back lobe, whatever. It was all over. So his brain from being hit was totally affected.
Okay. There is some underlying circumstances, however. Toxicology tests revealed steroids in his system, causing some people to believe he may have suffered a fit of roid rage and killed his family. However, Benoit's exact motives for killing his wife have never been revealed, causing many people to wonder what happened.
Did he have an autopsy? Do you know? I wonder if they ever found out if he was on
steroids. I'm assuming so, because this is following his death. They scanned the brain. So I'm assuming they did an autopsy in the end, too.
So I wonder if he had... So it says the autopsy said that he contained 10 times the normal level of testosterone. So you're right. He was definitely roid raging, that's for sure.
Yeah.
And the autopsy showed that his heart was 3 times larger than it should have been. So... apparently his doctor told him that he was going to be dead within the next 10 months regardless because of his enlarged heart. And I wonder if that's because of the steroids. I'm going to confirm this. Hang on.
Well, you confirm that. I'm going to start with the next one before we get into our house of terror, our main case.
It does. It causes thickening of the heart and enlargement. I think we're on to something. So if he had roid rage and was in his phase and he killed his family, that's so crazy to me. Wow.
Right? That's intense.
That's crazy.
So I wouldn't say it's as crazy as these last two.
I was just going to say, let's see.
So this is Ronald Gene Simmons. And this is no relation to Gene Simmons? Yes. So over the course of 1 week in December 1987, 47-year-old Ronald Simmons, a retired serviceman who has served both the Navy and the Air Force, murdered 14 of his family members, including his wife, children, grandchildren, daughter-in-law, son-in-law, as well as a stranger and an acquaintance. Simmons' victims ranged from the age of 1 to 46, and he killed them either by shooting them or strangling them to death. His killing spree started on December 22, 1987, when he murdered his wife and 6 kids in their Arkansas home. And it continued on December 26, 1987, when he took the lives of 7 additional family members when they arrived at his house for a post-Christmas celebration. 2 days later, on the 28th, He murdered a young woman he'd been obsessed with, and then he went on a rampage in Russellville, Arkansas, where he killed one man and wounded several others. Simmons was arrested, tried, and convicted of 16 counts of murder. He was executed by lethal injection about 3 years later, at the age of 49. Simmons never explained why he killed his entire family, although his investigators discovered he'd sexually abused one of his daughters, and she'd even given birth to her father's child. Right? Like,
that's so disturbing to me. And he had six children?
Yeah, yeah.
Did you see him? He looked like Charles Manson.
I did see him. Yeah, I got that creepy, yes, creepy look. I'm like, oh, okay.
Okay, I wonder if it was, which daughter was it? And how did they find out that she had his baby? I need to find this out.
Right?
Jean Simmons' daughter. So he killed all his family.
Yes, he killed his whole family, I guess you can say.
Oh, he killed his child too.
Yes, yes.
By his daughter.
So, like, oh, I'm wondering if, like, he got his daughter pregnant, she took off while pregnant and, like, left the family for a little bit and came back with this baby, and he found out it was his, and to stop anyone from talking, he killed all six of them, and then...
Yeah, that's what I think so, too. I was just going to say that. Going?
I'm not too sure.
That, or she threatened to tell.
Right, right.
Which is the only reason why he would, I mean, shoot them all. What else would there be?
Exactly.
If she would have told, he definitely would have went to jail.
For sure. Because this was...
Arkansas, right?
Yeah, this is 2000... Sorry, this was 87, but still, yeah. He would have went to prison, and who else knows what would have happened?
Wow. Well, I guess that could be a motive, too, why you would kill your entire family, unless they all knew.
However, nothing is as much of a mystery as our last case to talk about, the House of Terror. So,
Xavier... You're going to have to teach me how to say this last name.
I'm not even 100% sure how to say the last name, even though I am part French, so I'm probably going to pronounce it wrong.
Just gonna guess.
Just because, okay. Just also because Canadian French and like French from it's France. Different. Yeah, two different things.
It's different. Yeah.
So Xavier Pierre Marie Dupont de Ligonnès was born in Versailles, France on January 9th, 1961. His father was an engineer and his mother did daily chores. So, I mean, like, so his mother was a stay-at-home mom, I guess you can say. The Dupont de Ligonnès, or the Ligonnès, is an aristocratic French family originally from a region in southeastern France where many prominent members of the family lived. In the early 1980s, a young 20-year-old Xavier met Agnes, his future wife. Xavier longed for adventure, and soon him and Agnes broke up so he could go traveling. Upon arriving back, he learned that Agnes had moved on and was pregnant with somebody else's baby. Xavier decided to marry Agnes and adopt the child and give it, the child his prestigious name after the, I guess you could say the baby's blood father, birth father, was no longer in the picture for whatever reasons.
Probably just abandoned her.
It is also said that basically marrying an unwed mother was unheard of and like a taboo at the time.
I think in some countries it still is, even today.
Yeah. So after Xavier and his wife got married, he worked as a salesman and attempted to create several businesses over the next few years, all with little success. Causing him to owe lots of money.
Oh, here we go.
He founded NetSurf Concept, a company that was recorded on the commercial register in Florida, United States. So basically, he had workings like in Florida, like all over the world. So he was while not a good businessman, he was a business. His advisor was Gerard Corona, a French immigrant and the manager of the company Strategy Netcom, which was founded in 1998. Corona specialized in assisting foreigners with administrative and legal procedures in the U.S. and helped his clients open foreign bank accounts and obtain anonymous bank cards, allowing them to withdraw money anywhere in the world without leaving a trace. So, wow. Even though I like typed a lot of this up, I typed it. I didn't read it, you know, like I didn't process it. So like this to me is a big red flag. Like this is something that we could come back to in the future. So in 2003, Xavier formed his own business, Cellref. Purpose was defined as a secretive, but only in 2003, he formed a business called Cellref, a secret business with minimum information ever released to authorities. Xavier hired 6 salespeople to the company in 2003, freeing them all from their contracts not long afterwards.
Yeah, because there's nothing suspicious about that.
So I just wanted to kind of explain a little bit about Count Xavier. So descended from nobility and the recipient of a count title after his father passed away, Xavier purported to be a businessman, but had limited success, like we were mentioning. When his father passed away, Xavier apparently learned that there was no family money left, but also inherited the same kind of rifle that was used on the family shortly afterwards. In the weeks leading up to the killings, Xavier reportedly learned how to use the gun. He purchased cement, quicklime, and which all was later found on top of the bodies. He wrote a note to the family and friends saying he was leaving, and the family were going into witness protection with the DEA for some sort of information, and then essentially he disappeared.
So in case no one knows what quicklime is.
Yeah. What is that?
It's basically a chemical that you pour on top of a dead body and it makes it decompose really quickly.
Oh, okay. So I am going to read this quick letter. I'm going to try and shorten the letter because it is a long letter. So an unsigned dated letter on April 11th, 2011, apparently sent by Xavier, was received by his close relatives. It was 4 pages of A4 styled paper written in an informal, sometimes humorous style. At times he rambles, goes off topic. It translates into English as follows. Hi, everyone. Huge surprise. We had to leave urgently for the U.S. due to a very particular set of circumstances that we will explain below. You're receiving this letter by conventional post because for the next few years, we can't communicate any other way. No emails, no texts, no phone calls for safety reasons. When you read this letter, we will no longer be in France and won't be able to return for a as of yet undetermined period of time, brackets, a few years. You must be wondering what's going on. So here's the story, at least as much as we're able to tell you. This letter is the only correspondence we were allowed to write, which might be good news for some of you, and it has been checked before being sent to you. When we started our company in Miami in 2003, we were put into contact through the person who started the company with the DEA, who were looking for a French national to infiltrate the French nightclub scene to obtain information about drug trafficking and money laundering networks without drawing attention to themselves. Through the route of commercial, I found myself in a very different city every evening with a legitimate reason to make contact with nightclub bosses, to invite them to be listed in the leisure of the RDC section. I'm not too sure what that is. So I, Xavier, was the ideal candidate. So once I was tested and briefed, I accepted my mission of working incognito for the DEA under the condition I maintain secrecy. So that's the reason why we returned to France instead of settling in Miami. And not due to vaccinations that are supposedly dangerous for the children. Those who have never swallowed this bogus reason can rest assured they were right.
Maybe he was an anti-vaxxer?
Is what he's saying in this letter? I'm not, like they said, he was rambling at times. So this could be part of his rambling.
It seemed like maybe too he had a little bit of an underlying issue, right? Something that maybe caused delusion or something, because if he's rambling on about pretty much nothing, and it talks about like how he said he was a part of the Federal Drug Administration.
Yeah.
Was that ever proven?
I don't think any of it was. I think it was all.
So he was talking out of his ass, basically.
Basically, as far as we know, yes, but the truth only he knows, right? So everything was going according to plan in the nightclubs for at least 7 years until now. With the information that I, Xavier, have collected, I have become a key witness in an upcoming trial involving major international drug trafficking kingpins. The trial will have to take place in the U.S. in the next few years. The date has not been determined. So pretty much that said, it kind of goes on to say that my cover has been blown and received confirmation that my cover has been blown yesterday. It's dangerous for me and my family. We're being placed under witness protection and have been placed in the U.S. government custody and transferred to the U.S. We have new identities, which have to be kept secret. We will no longer officially exist as French citizens.
It said, too, the lease on their house had been terminated.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. We'll get there. Oh, yeah.
All of their bank accounts were closed.
Mm-hmm. So then he goes on to like advantages and disadvantages. I don't know why he is going. It's like the absolute safety. The government is taking care of us financially. Living in the U.S. It's warm most of the time and the music is good. Disadvantages. No contact with you and the family for a long time. We're forbidden from using Facebook and social networking. We've had to give up the dogs. Someone took both of them, so they wouldn't be separated, though.
Right.
We know
what happened to the dogs.
Yeah. We know we can count on you. In his letter, there was a small section that was redacted for some reason. It basically kind of goes on the next little couple pages explaining, like, who's getting what, who can have what, you know, who in the family is getting, etc. Then it's saying, sell the golf convertible and send the money from the sale to Christine. The car was unsellable because it wasn't theirs. It was one of the son's friends, apparently. So go to Arthur's and Thomas's place, so his two older sons, and basically do the same thing. The landlords are aware. Addresses and keys are on the living room table, and this stuff is going wherever. So like DVD players, drum kits, guitars, pianos, like stuff like that.
It said that the house was partially empty.
Yeah. So it does seem like they were selling things. It's hard to know what exactly happened in the days after the murder, on like, because no one really seen anything. It seems like the house went quiet and then that was that.
It starts.
So basically, it went to say, like, certain family members, here's the information to some of our bank accounts that can you send this much to wherever, this much is going to go into your pocket for being thankful, et cetera, et cetera. There was about six different people that they had listed as, we need you to do this. You have to do this stuff for us. While we're out, thank you so much. Basically, he went on to say, so that's it for the to-do list for the family. The school, the children's schools are aware, as are Arthur and Thomas's landlords. Egg, Dis, and Arthur's employers are all aware. The official story is that we have been transferred to Australia for work without providing any specifics. Basically, this is what the family started receiving until someone actually called the police and said, can you go and check on things? Okay, so in 2005, DuPont's wife, Agnes, filed a police report against her husband for assaulting Arthur, the oldest son. Also,
he adopted?
Technically, okay. The son that's not his. Financial problems exasperated their marital stress. Xavier had failed to create a steady career for himself. He had begun a series of businesses, including running a hotel guide and membership card program, according to Airmail, but none of them ever took off. Like we said, he was a businessman, but he sucked at it, it seemed.
So he was investing all his money and he was never making any back.
Exactly. However, basically, it wasn't just his money he was investing. They relied mostly on the money inherited from his wife's family. However, by 2011, they had gone through most of her inheritance. Xavier had gone into debt and was extremely desperate. He'd taken up a mistress in Paris and had been forced to borrow 50,000 euros from her out of desperation, according to the Euro News. In an email he had written to her in 2010, he declares he was ruined at rock bottom like never before. I am awake almost every night with these morbid ideas, burning down the house after giving everyone sleeping pills, or killing myself so that Agnes gets 600,000 euros. In any case, my life will end in the next few months if I don't get 25 euros immediately. Most of the time, I am not in a dream, but a nightmare, and I can't escape, except for, of course, by doing something radical and final. All right, so I just going to go into a little blurb about each of the children, because I feel like we need to know a little bit about them, because it's not Xavier's story. These are the ones who are dead.
I just want to tell everyone what that conversion is.
Yes.
Holy cow. So 600,000 euros to Canadian is $869,000.
Ooh.
So she could have gotten almost $1 million if he had.
Yeah, if he had died.
Yeah. Wow. So,
Agnes Ligonnès married Xavier in 1992. She was born on November 9th, 1962 in the suburbs. And her name was Agnes Hodanger. She was an assistant at Blanche de Castel Catholic School in Nantes, where part of her duties involved teaching catechism.
It's a type of math, like shapes, I think, something like that.
She was described as being very religious, regularly attending mass with her children. She was 48 at the time of her death. So, the oldest son, Arthur Nicholas DuPont, was born.
Arthur was the one who was from another father, but he was adopted by Xavier, right?
Yes. Was born on July 7th, 1990, to another father, but was recognized by Xavier as being his son when he married Agnes when Arthur was 2 years old. He earned a bachelor latte.
It's like a bachelor's degree.
Yeah. In science, industrial technology, and sustainable development at the age of 20. And he was studying for a technical diploma in IT at the St. Gabriel Private College in St. Lawrence, Sither.
Just try your best.
The Vendée department, an hour's drive from their home in Nantes. He was also employed as a waiter at a pizzeria in Nantes. He was 20 years old at the time of his death. Thomas. So the second born son was born August 28th, 1992 in South France. He earned a baccalaureate in literature when he was, since he had a passion about music, and he studied additionally at the Catholic University of the West in the town of Angers. He lived with his brother. Essentially, they both lived together. He was often accompanied by his family, who picked him up and would drop him off at university. He was 18, or just turned 18, at the time of his death.
So he lived at home?
I believe Thomas and Arthur lived together, because they kept saying that Thomas and Arthur's landlord was being contacted.
Okay, that would make more sense.
Yeah, something like that.
Okay.
Or maybe they lived together, but then he stayed the weekends at home. Yeah. Let's introduce
Anne.
Anne was the firstborn daughter. She was 16 at the time of her death. She was in 11th grade at La Perviere, a private Catholic school, who, following an academic curriculum in science, and was described by her friends and relatives as a girl who shared her mother's religious beliefs and was also considerate and approachable.
Shared her mother's religious beliefs.
And was considerate and often approachable. She modeled additionally for mail order catalogs. So I guess you could say like Sears catalogs, maybe? Maybe special catalogs like that.
Or like ads.
And she also studied. So she was modeling and studying and in school for science. And she was 16 when she died. The last is Benoit. He was 13 years old at the time of his death. He was born May 29th, 1997. He was an altar boy at a church in Nantes, and he often enjoyed playing the drums. So let's go into a little bit of a timeline about what happened. In July 2010, Xavier emailed friends writing that one day there may be accidents that have happened to his family that he may be blamed for. He wrote, "I hope that even after a police investigation, my parents, brothers, sisters will never be led to believe that I intentionally caused these accidents, even if the evidence is strong."
Right.
Xavier also sent two friends two separate letters in which states, "If things go wrong, I have only two solutions, screw up with my car or set the house on fire when everyone is asleep. Postscript, I am very serious, lucid, and under influence of no drugs or alcohol." And another part of the emails that he had written, he put, "I will therefore be at the end of August to September before my final decision is made, suicide alone or collective suicide." Then there was an attachment, which was dispositions, essentially resembling a will. So this was like before, like almost, about 6 months before the family.
So nobody reported this at all.
No, I really don't know why no one thought, "Oh, hey, this is a little weird that he's telling us."
That's what I mean.
Right? So I don't know. Maybe his friends were just like, "Yeah, maybe he is fucked up and maybe he is on drugs." I don't know. However, 3 months before the death of his wife and children, his father passed away. After his death, Xavier went through the belongings left in his apartment, looking for things that were of value, obviously, because he was in financial troubles. He realized that his father was essentially living near poverty and was suffering his own financial problems as well. The only thing Xavier inherited from his father was a .22 long rifle, which he began using in earnest despite never having shown any interest in guns before. The following month, so about a month later in February, Xavier obtained his gun license and began frequently shooting at the range just outside of Nantes, sometimes even bringing his sons along. While using his deceased father's rifle at a shooting range might seem innocent enough on its own, Xavier's behavior became more suspicious the following month. Records show he bought a silencer for the rifle in March. Then he followed that purchase with even more ominous shopping spree. In the weeks leading up to the murders, he purchased cement, chalk line, bullets, cleaning supplies, garbage bags, a spade, and a trolley, according to the BBC. In the weeks preceding his family's disappearance, Xavier seemed to be preparing for a big move. Witnesses mentioned seeing Xavier loading things into his car in the week before the vanishing, according to Europe One News. Xavier also paid off some of the remaining debts that they did have, including some of the final bill for his child's private schools, before eventually closing the bank accounts in the family's name. The lease on the family home had also been terminated, and a final note was taped to the mailbox stating, "Please return all mail to sender. Thank you." On April 11th, just a few days after the family was last sighted, Agnes and Xavier's relatives started receiving those letters that we started talking about earlier, basically saying, in short, that the family was moving to America to be placed in witness protection. So,
did you say he owed that debt to a loan shark? Or did I just read that somewhere?
You may have read that somewhere. I didn't mention that.
I'm just wondering if maybe he sold his family for his life. He owed it to a loan shark.
Just an idea. Okay. The letter also encouraged family members to basically keep up with the lie that the family had relocated to Australia. Maybe I missed a sentence, but they said... they sent the letter to the Nance district attorney saying that they did not believe his story and did not believe that Agnes would be So this is Agnes's family was a little bit suspicious when they received the letter. So they sent the letter to the district attorney in Nance saying that they did not believe the story and didn't believe that their daughter would leave without telling them or even giving them a call. On April 15th, the police returned to the house to conduct a more thorough investigation. They discovered that photos were missing from their frames. However, there was nothing else suspicious in the house. Agnes's family continued to put pressure on the police, certain that the family did not simply leave. So 3 days later, on April 18th, this is the third time the police are visiting the house. However, nothing. On the 19th, the police visited the house a fourth time. On the 20th, nothing. However, on their sixth visit on April 21st, police lieutenant found something odd under the terrace garden. That same day, the district attorney held a press conference at the courthouse stating that the family's disappearance was unusual and they were going to open an investigation into the case. Suddenly, the DA halted the press conference and answered the phone. He learned that while the police were digging under the terrace, they discovered large trash bags that were bound with tape. Inside the bags were several bodies. They were wrapped in blankets and duvets, then tied up and put into bags. A small religious icon was found next to each body, such as a small candle or a cross. This indicated that the perpetrator was imitating a religious burial. It also showed an affectionate bond between the perpetrator and the buried bodies.
Yeah, I was just going to say that if someone murders you and places that in your grave, they definitely had somewhat of a bond.
So there was three graves, I believe. The first grave contained the bodies of Agnes, Arthur, Benoit, and Anne. So the three blood children and the wife. The second, two dogs were buried. And the third, Thomas, the adopted son, was buried in his own separate grave.
Well, Xavier's body, volumes to me.
Right? Xavier's body was not found. However, from that point, he obviously became the prime suspect. Having discovered that he had disappeared, the investigating judge issued a warrant and sent it to all members all member countries who are part of Interpol. This is known as an international warrant. However, for many friends, it was impossible to believe that Xavier could have committed these crimes. They felt that they knew him well enough that it's not possible whatsoever that he had murdered his family.
What do you mean? He basically gave them a map of how he was going to do it.
Right.
And no one said anything.
The police began investigating the deaths. From the autopsy, they found sleeping pills in the children's viscera. This meant that they were put to sleep. Agnes did not have drugs in her system. However, she did have a sleep apnea machine, which helped her sleep. It was discovered that her machine stopped suddenly at 3 a.m. On the morning of April 3rd or April 4th. It is believed she was the first killed. Then the children were next. Each victim was killed by two bullets to the head. The bullets extracted from the bodies had been shot from a 22 long rifle. Surprisingly, not waking up the neighbors nearby. And if you look at the house, what they live in is pretty much, to me, townhomes. More,
that's what it looked like to me,
more
too.
Upgraded townhomes. So,
like a lavish townhouse.
Yeah. So to say that, if anyone has no idea what we're talking about, essentially like four houses put together in like one massive building, essentially, but they're all their own individual like homes, if that makes sense.
They're pretty close together too.
Exactly.
Unless, because I'm looking at the picture of the house, it seems like they owned, like it was one, two neighbors, and it was them, and they owned the rest.
Something like that. I wasn't too sure. I wasn't too sure looking at the pictures on how I understood like the property lines and whatnot. But
they said they had a garden and everything, so I'm just assuming.
Okay, so basically, the murders were considered to be methodical executions. The victims were all in their pajamas, so it's believed that they were killed while they slept in their beds. Strangely, there was no traces of blood in the bedrooms. There was also no traces of blood in the living room, foyer, and the bathroom. There was no blood found on the walls, furniture, or any of the floors. It's difficult to understand how someone could have killed five people, shot them in the head, and left no traces and no evidence behind. When crime scene investigators took samples from the scene, they did not find any fingerprints or DNA from anyone. At that point, there was still absolutely no physical proof implicating Xavier. At the age of 50, he had never had any problems with the law, so it was difficult to understand if it was a criminal mastermind behind this. The investigator noted that killing three sons, Xavier was also killing his bloodline. For the French nobility in the aristocratic world, this would have been dreadful because he is killing anyone who could carry the name, the last of the name, I guess you can say. Police were easily able to track Xavier's last moves. He had stayed at home in Nantes for a full week after the murders. Neighbors reported seeing him come and go on the house on April 8th. Xavier also made posts online and, like I said, sent emails to his friends and family members. He finally left home on April 11th and began traveling south, his car getting caught by a speed camera along the way. That night, he checked into a hotel in the town of Blagnac in southwestern France. He stayed for one night before continuing his journey, moving east to Vaucluse and staying one night on April 12th in Auberge de Cassinage, according to Le Figaro News. Mom. However, this time he checked in under a false name. Xavier continued traveling southeast the next day, spending the night in a hotel west of Tulum. So now, on April 22nd, so probably almost about 3 weeks since the family's death, give or take, his last known whereabouts were, I guess you can say, trapped. So the day before police discovered the bodies, police were easily able to track his travels through southeastern France, following security cameras and his use of credit cards at hotels and restaurants. Xavier was last seen on Thursday, April 14th, when a security camera in the parking lot picked him up leaving a hotel. The Hotel Formula One, still in France. On the morning of April 15th, Xavier checked out of the hotel, abandoned his car, disappeared, carrying only a backpack on his back. Oh, fuck. My back. The area that he went missing, Rockburn, Sir Argens, was surrounded by cliffs, mountains, other crevices, where it would be easy for a body to go undetected, because nothing about Xavier's behavior indicated he was trying to hide anything from the police or go on the run. Investigators believed that Xavier's plan had been to take one last trip to South France, where he had happy memories, and then kill himself. Police began a search of the area shortly afterwards. Nothing was found. Investigators believe the whole trip was basically to throw police off his trail. To basically, oh, I'm going to go here, there, I'm here, and he'd be somewhere else. Yeah, exactly. Yep. Investigators have continued to hunt for Xavier for almost 10 years, but he's never been found. In July 2015, police thought they had a break when a photo assuming to be from Xavier was sent to a journalist in Nantes. The photo was of two children, Arthur and Benoit, and had the note saying, "I'm still alive" on the back, along with the date, July 11th, 2015. And the name, Xavier Dupont de Ligonnès, per RTL. However, investigators were never able to track the source of the letter and remain skeptical that it actually came from the real Xavier Dupont de Ligonnès. Since then, there have been multiple false sightings. In 2018, police received a tip that Xavier was hiding out in a monastery back in that same town that he originally went missing, masquerading as a monk. However, police raided the monastery and they didn't really find anything.
Of course, because he was probably taken off by then.
Right. So in 2019, a man believed to be Xavier was arrested in Scotland. Although his fingerprints at first appeared to be a match, DNA proved it was another case of mistaken identity. Currently, as of today, police have no breaks in the case, have no new leads, and are currently clueless.
Cold. It's cold.
Right?
When he stayed, you said west he went to that last hotel, right? Motel, whatever you said. I think you said he went west. La Seyne-sur-Mer? Yeah.
Yeah, I think it was southwestern.
It says he's captured on camera.
Yeah.
When he checked out and he decided to leave his car behind.
Yes, yes. So that was literally the last time that they actually had any type of proof of that, or that he was in the area.
And they said he was carrying something long in his bag and they assumed it was the rifle.
Yeah, correct.
Right? That's what they said? Wow, that's crazy.
Arthur left St. Gabriel Private College and did not turn up at the pizzeria where he worked because he was also due to pick up his monthly wage. The manager at the restaurant was surprised because on the first day of the month, I'm assuming the first day of the month, he's always there to pick up his check.
Xavier, as a college guy would be.
Yep. So on April 2nd, Xavier bought cement, a shovel, and a hoe. That same day he bought cement, a shovel, and a hoe. And then on the second, Xavier bought 4 bags of lime, 10 kilograms each, from different shops and names, like you were saying. Quick lime is calcium oxide, and when it contacts water, as it often does in burial sites, it reacts with the water to make calcium hydroxide, also known as slaked lime. This is highly corrosive material, which may damage the corpse, but the heat produced from this activity will kill many of the putrefying bacteria and dehydrate the body. So I'm not too sure what that last sentence actually means.
Basically, it breaks all the tissue down to bone.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
So like John Wayne Gacy, when he buried all those 41 bodies in his basement, they were mostly bone because he had poured lime over them before he buried them.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So the last day that Agnes was seen, she was seen by her neighbor called Fabrice. Xavier was shortly seen afterwards putting large bags into their Citroen C5 car. That evening, Xavier, Agnes, Anne, Arthur, and Benoit all went out to a lovely restaurant, and Nance then visited the cinema. At 10:37, Xavier left a message on his sister Christine's answer phone. We spent our Sunday evening in the cinema together, then in a restaurant, and we've just got back. I'm just calling to ask if it's too late to speak with you on the phone, and I now see it's gone to voicemail. But I was surprised. You spoke to me about Bertram, who is getting ready for his flight. Huh? I thought he'd only just arrived, so I was a bit surprised. Anyway, sending you my love. If it's not too late, call me back, send me a text, and I'll call you. I'm going to put the kids to bed and say hi to everyone. See you soon. Maybe. The recording was released to the public in September 2019. Let's get to the actual murders.
I'm starting to wonder if he was protected by his family.
I'd like to think that, but then I don't know. Like, does he have
this? This sister seemed to know an awful lot about what was going to happen, and she just chose to be like, oh, he's just kidding.
Seems like Xavier. When Xavier's dad died, Xavier himself became a count. One of those high names. To me, I want to say that, like, if Xavier only had sisters, well, the bloodline isn't going to continue. They're going to be, all the kids are not going to be Ligonese anymore. They're going to be what these sisters' husbands are. So
yeah, and that first son that he adopted, I don't think would count.
No, but
as the count name, because it wasn't his bloodline. It was just him adopting him.
Right. But it seems like when Xavier does go to attempt to kill Thomas, so the son that is not his, he did possibly struggle with that because he realized that killing Thomas would for sure mean that the blood name would surely stop, because they said that
he was the oldest.
They said it was the wife and the 3 kids. Thomas wasn't involved. So
and he was buried separately. Well, I mean, that is so obvious, isn't it? He was buried separately.
Exactly.
Because he wanted to keep them away.
Yeah.
Him away from them.
So investigators believe that the wife and children were murdered on the night of the 3rd. So after they got back from the movies, or technically early in the morning on the 4th.
Yeah.
On Monday, April 4th, Anne and Benoit did not attend school due to illness. Their friends became concerned when they couldn't reach them online nor text them on their cell phones because their cell phones were canceled.
Yep.
Xavier spoke to his sister on the phone for 20 to 30 minutes that day. She later told the police that everything seemed normal. a friend of Thomas who studied music with, right? Right. You're like, this sister's pissing me off.
Because you know what? Like, he's literally told you, I don't know how many times at this point, like, I'll see you later, maybe. Or like, I'm going to kill my family, or I'm going to kill myself. And this bitch is just like, everything just seemed fine. Like, no, it wasn't fine.
He's gonna leave the fucking kill your whole family. What do you mean?
But everything was fine.
Right. So a friend of Thomas who studied music with him confirmed that Thomas spent the afternoon on April 5th with him at a friend's home in Angers, so nearby town, where they played music and watched television. Thomas had planned to spend the night at his friend's house, but Xavier phoned and told him to come home to Nantes because his mom had suffered a cycling accident.
Jeez.
Xavier told Thomas, listen, you have to come back. Your mother has been in a cycling accident. She's in the hospital in a coma. We don't know if she'll come out. It's very serious. You have to come home now. Thomas finished eating with his friend, then took a train home at around 10 p.m. The following day, the friend tried to contact Thomas to see what's happening, but only received brief text messages such as, I'm not coming to yours, I'm ill, and I'm really ill, I'm not coming to class. 2 days after Thomas's departure, his friend received a text message. I'm out of battery. My dad's looking for a new charger for me. This is the last time Thomas's friend had ever heard from him. On the 5th, Xavier ate with Thomas at La Croix Cadeau, an expensive restaurant in Arville near Angers. They arrived at about 9 p.m., and Xavier ordered a 35-euro tasting menu, a half bottle of red wine, while Thomas had a sea bass dish and tomato juice. The two waiters at the restaurant remember Thomas feeling unwell near the end of the meal and that Xavier and Thomas barely spoke to each other during the evening. On April 5th, so that same day, a bailiff arrived at the home to try to recover a $20,000 debt, but no one answered the door. So this is what you were kind of asking about. Was it a debt? Yeah, so it was a bailiff coming to collect the debt. The family's neighbors claim they saw Agnes in front of the house on April 5th. An employee of a hairdressing salon near the house claimed to have seen Agnes. The employee stated, I came to pick up my wages. It was Tuesday, April 5th. I saw her on the pavement on her phone around 12:15, 12:30, which... we already know that they already said that the date of death would have been the 3rd or the 4th. So how are they seeing her on the 5th, which is really weird. So Pauline, Thomas's ex-girlfriend, said that she had spoken to him on Facebook on the 5th while he was at his friend's house and that he had seemed odd in his way of writing. When he told her, his father told him that his mother had been in a cycling accident and that Thomas had to return home. She noticed he seemed lonely and had told her that he would skip classes on Wednesday to come to a music rehearsal. When he didn't show up to rehearsal, she noted that that wasn't like him. During this week, neighbors heard the family dogs howling for two consecutive nights and then never heard them again. On April 6th, Arthur's girlfriend, so the second oldest son, also didn't hear from her, knocks on the door of the family home where a light was on in the first floor, but when she knocked, no dogs came running to the door barking like they normally did. The next day, Xavier is seen making several trips to his car and back from the car, loading and unloading large bags. A neighbor also claims to have spoken to Agnes this day. On April 7th, I saw Agnes walking her dog. We spoke briefly, then I cut our chat short because I had an important appointment. The newspapers say that the autopsies put her death on the 4th, but I'm also convinced I saw her on the evening of the 7th because I know I didn't have time to speak with her as I was picking up my son from the childminder every Thursday evening. So childminder is babysitter. On April 8th, Xavier rates on the Catholic form from the IP address of the family's home. He also sends an email to his brother-in-law, so his sister's husband, saying that everything's fine, Bertram. You'll hear more details soon enough through Christine, so through my sister. Bye for now. All the best, Xavier. A message to Xavier's mother and sister is also sent from the home's IP address. So it seems like Xavier was sending quite a few different, like, types of emails, styles of emails, like this one, that one.
Explanations.
Like, yeah, different explanations, either to make everyone's story, like when they talk to each other, not make sense or what? Not really sure.
Calling it right now, the sister knew more than she said she did. Calling it.
We're going to find feeling. We're hopefully going to find out soon.
Just saying.
Okay, on April 11th, the school that Anne and Benoit attended received a letter from Xavier stating that Anne and Benoit would be leaving school as the family's leaving to Australia due to emergency professional changes. The Catholic school where Agnes worked also received a resignation letter, apparently signed by Agnes, stating the same reason for leaving. The headmaster did try to reach out, but couldn't contact them, obviously. On April 11th, an unsigned dated letter was sent to Xavier's family, explaining everything about the witness protection that we went through earlier.
DEA.
There is no proof, however, that this letter was actually written by Xavier. So it's not 100% that he even wrote it, but could be. Xavier then stays at the hotel in southern France on April 11th and 12th before using his credit card. Then he stays in that Auberge de Cassinage before moving to his last location, which he got a room under the false name of Mr. Laurent Xavier, also paying with his credit card. So right here, to me, I'm like, so does he have a Laurent Xavier credit card too?
Well, they would have checked that and his ID.
Yeah, because they can I see your ID in your credit card, please? Well, it doesn't match. What can I see is the person here whose credit card's here.
Like, yeah.
So I'm not sure. But going back to this little paragraph, back to earlier when we said that he was working with someone who was able to obtain credit cards.
And for foreign bank accounts.
For foreign banks in the different jurisdictions that were non-trackable.
Yeah, non-traceable.
Mentioned earlier. But there was some additional news. When Xavier was in one of the places in the southern East France, he had lived in the same town in the early 1980s, and a former girlfriend of his did say that Xavier did try to contact her, but they didn't end up meeting, which is kind of weird. But could she know more than she let on to? Is this an ex-girlfriend, or is this an ex-girlfriend who turned into a mistress? We would never know. But it would be, I think if he said the same thing, but said, oh, I don't have a family right now, I have to leave the country because the FBI, and did his whole spiel, I feel like she may be willing to help him out. For all I know, but yes, to this date, like we said, the latest information, no one and nothing has been found. We have no location on Xavier on whether he's alive, whether he's dead, but this is one of the highest Interpol type of missing cases that are out there. He hasn't been found, like we said. And yeah.
Said too that apparently the neighbors never heard it because the police believe that he was using a silencer.
Right.
But so he shot them, they believe, in their beds, but there was no traces of blood splatter.
Anywhere. Yeah, no traces of blood splatter. So it's, I really don't know.
On the walls, furniture, floors. I mean,
like, wow. To me, like, because the wife wasn't. Oh, you know, they say the wife was the first one to die, though. So it's like, yeah, if the kids are drugged and passed out and asleep, they're not going to wake up when they hear anything, any muffling or anything. But I still feel like, I don't know, maybe I'm just not a gun person. I don't know. But I feel like even with a 22 shotgun long range, I feel like there would be some sort of sound, even with a silencer. But then again, you think about some of these like movies and TV shows, and these killers put a pillow to the head and fire the gun against the pillow to silence it.
Oh, yeah. Right. And it does work. I have heard that. Yeah.
So I guess it is totally possible. But I feel like Xavier would have to go through a lot of preparations. Like, I feel like he would have to coat the room in plastic, like lay the kids on the bed, shoot them in the head.
That's what I mean. Like, but that takes a lot of methodical planning.
I want to know if there were gunshots. No, I want to know if the bullets went completely through the head, came out the other side, and if they did.
That's a question.
Did they do, like, is it confirmed that they did go into the bed? Because they would have to, I would assume they'd go in, down into the mattress and even into the floor then at that point.
Unless he was a really good shot.
Right?
But it said, though, that he was practicing with the rifle.
Yeah. But I still, and he was only practicing for 2 months before he did this murder. So I don't feel like that's enough time for it to be so methodical and there be no blood. Like, to me, that this is almost like an Israel Keys type of situation. No blood, nothing there, like cleaned up so good, for example.
Jeez, that's insane.
Right.
I mean, wow, I can't believe that.
So wild, so wild. But like, looking at Xavier, you definitely would not see like anything like dark in him. Out of these people on the list, I would say he's probably the most like normal looking, regular looking, like typical father.
Well, yeah, he looks like a businessman.
Yeah. I mean, he wasn't bad looking. No, he wasn't. He was a younger looking man.
Yeah, he was young.
So I feel like also like with his looks, like, yes, they say he was 50, but he was 50 looking like that. To me,
yeah,
like,
he looks younger to me.
Yeah, we already know that if, like with Ted Bundy, for example, like, you can be very, very, quote-unquote, like, good-looking, seem
That's crazy.
Right? But, yeah, there's, like, I wish I could have, like, shorten the episode, but it's like there's so much information that has to all be said, or else you're missing things out and it's not accurate enough.
So that's very odd.
But there's also Henry, right now
it never even says like the update about the letter. Mm. That was what, 2015, that said he was still alive. It said there was no more information about the note and it served as very little evidence. So what was the point?
Right? Exactly. Are we talking about the picture?
Yeah.
Of the signs? To me, so I don't know.
There was no other piece of writing from this guy that they can compare this to. Like, it seemed like really shoddy police work.
Like, who else is having these pictures of these two boys? Family members. Let's be honest. Family members or him. And we already know that there were pictures missing.
Yeah, that's what it said. All the pictures were missing out of the frames.
I mean, I think it would be morbid if he was like, here you go. Here's a picture of my kids. Can you mail it and write a note that I'm alive or something like that? Thank you. Like, that to me, that's just really off. And it just makes no sense whatsoever. It kind of makes
and he a little had more no sense. Money. Well, apparently he had no money.
Yeah, yeah. Unless he did meet his ex-girlfriend and she was able to give him money, like,
or they, he had some little hidden stash in those foreign bank accounts,
right? I mean, we already do know that he did have a mistress who did give him $50,000 apparently. Well, so it's like, who else is giving was giving him money? So how many other people did he ask?
And then he took off.
Exactly tied up all the main debts that he needed to me. I'm just like, for what? To help your credit? Like, what is the point? What was the point of like closing any of the bank accounts? Like, who the fuck cares?
Paying off leave the money.
Paying off the school. Like, I guess he really wanted to sell the illusion
that they were leaving and moving.
Yeah.
And that it was all fine and whatever.
Honestly, if the wife's family wasn't
asking so questions,
suspicious,
yeah,
how would this have turned out? Would we have ever known?
His sister didn't seem concerned in the slightest.
Right.
He kept saying, like, I'm going to kill my family. I feel like I'm going to do something. And she was just like, oh, he was normal.
Right.
Fine. Like, how do you not? She should be charged too as an accessory.
Definitely.
What is she doing now? Oh, she looks like a sketchy little bitch. Look at this bitch. I don't like her. Look at this bitch crossing her arms.
Oh, yeah, I don't like
her. Don't like her. No. She's suspicious.
Yeah.
Calling it.
Suspicious.
And then she said, yeah, like really, like, and then she says that he didn't kill them. Like, she's so sure he didn't kill them.
Right.
He owned the gun. He bought the lime. He bought the cement, I think it said.
Yes, he did buy the cement as well. Like, he bought everything. Like, we basically have the receipts for everything. Right?
There's no way he didn't do it.
Right.
That was so calculated.
And
he bought everything.
And he was seen for almost a week after the approximate deaths. So it's
I guess if there was no blood evidence, he had a week ish. That's what they say.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess it's very possible that he could have cleaned up over a week.
I mean, we also know he was a count. And
connections.
Yeah, if his bloodline was as popular as it's claimed to be.
Enough, like, to be a count, yeah.
Who's to say that, hey, I need a mess cleaned up. Yeah, I need a mess cleaned up.
Wow, and that's maybe what was in those large garbage bags was evidence. He was bringing out wallpaper, whatever.
Right.
He was taking off the walls to hide the blood spatter. This is weird.
But if we painted over blood, we would still be able to find the blood. So it's like, I guess we could try to assume that they were killed outside in the backyard. But I feel like
there would be some blood somewhere out there.
Yeah.
On the grass, rocks, because they were buried in a garden under the porch, I think it said.
Yes, exactly.
So, come on. And then the cop said that the cement that was poured, or a cement block or something, that was put on top of the bodies was softer than it should have been if it was done a week prior. So who the hell else was he leaving keys to, who like snuck in there and put the cement on top of them?
Right.
Someone else knew. I'm calling it. I bet it's that bitch Christine.
It's that bitch Christine's sister.
Fuck. She looks like such an evil... Jesus. He would have been better off killing himself. At least his wife would have been to pay off all his debt.
Okay, so welcome to part 3 of our Israel Key special.
Oh, Jesus Christ. Are you fucking kidding me right now?
You're like, oh, fuck, I don't got the time for that.
No, I have to fucking pee. I don't know. There's just a lot going on right now. Tired as fuck because I'm old and I'm pregnant. I'll let you know what days Dylan's off because it's easier because then he can stay upstairs with Hayden while I'm down here.
Yeah.
He's off for like 4 more days. So oh, let nice. Me ask him and then we can do something. We'll finish Israel Keys off.
Sure. Yeah.
Wow. That was awesome. That was crazy.
Right? Crazy. That was
crazy.
Juice and like Bad. Have a joint. Yeah. Same. Thank you.